the volume.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any fantasy sport, there is a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. Hi, everybody. It's Monday morning. I'm going to bring on Dave Wonstadt, who is the great football American storyteller. I've never met a coach who knows more people. So there's a lot of stories out there about the NFL and the new contracts that will be announced this week. I got a sniff of what the NFL did in regards of every network and what they're paying. The NFL did fine. You know, I always laugh when I see these stories. I roll my eyes at, oh, NFL ratings are down. They're down 4%. Folks, they don't matter. The reality is Fox, NBC, CBS, and Disney/ABC, we're all in the content business. There's a big tunnel, and we need programming in the tunnel. And the NFL is the singular American television product. So anytime any critic, anybody on social media talks about NFL ratings, mute them. It's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. Listen, the NBA isn't even close to the NFL. Baseball's not close. But the reality is, if a major NBA contract was up today or a major baseball contract was up, how do you think these networks survive? They have to have content. They need 4 and 5 and 6 hours a night. So the NFL is just in a different space where they're the number one program on every network. They're number one on Fox, on the NFL Network, on ESPN. They will be on ABC, CBS, and NBC. I mean, they've separated from everybody. But, you know, when the contracts are signed, the NFL will essentially get twice as much money as the last contract. And these networks have been negotiating with the NFL with their smartest attorneys and their smartest dealmakers for the last 2 years. It doesn't matter. Do you want it or not? The Thursday night broadcast is going to go to Amazon. So the Thursday night broadcast was not part of this negotiations. Networks wanted to, you know, they wanted to get Sunday and Monday and Sunday night figured out. So Thursday night's going to go to Amazon, I assume. It's a money loser for networks. You can't make money on Thursday. It's just very, very difficult for networks to make money on the Thursday. The NFL is going to ask too much. So Amazon, which is obviously worth, you know, significantly more than any television network, and, you know, it's worth all the TV networks combined, probably times 15. So Amazon's going to get into the Thursday night television business, and I imagine they'll do a pretty good job. Jeff Bezos, Seattle native, you know, he bought the Washington Post, and he likes content, Amazon Prime, so he's going to get himself into the sports business, and I look forward to it. I think they'll be great. The more, the merrier. All right, let's get to Dave Wonstadt. One of my favorite people, the great storyteller, Dave Wonstadt, former Bears and Dolphins coach, a lot of Super Bowls with Jimmy Johnson in Dallas, Miami Hurricane national titles, the defensive guy, the storyteller, and Coach Wonstadt's joining us. Let me start with something, because you have great stories. So when you look at Jerry Jones today, do you see the same Jerry, or does he meddle more? Do you think there's been a little bit of change of personality, or do you feel like you're watching the same guy you work for and won Super Bowls for?
No, I believe that Jerry Jones right now has truly delegated authority, responsibility, more than ever before to his son, Stephen. And Stephen Jones, you know, obviously played football, and Jerry went to Arkansas, and they're smart guys. And so I think that at the end of the day, Jerry's going to make the final decision, but I think he's really, I'm talking to people down there, that he's trusting his people around him to give him the best information. We saw him on his yacht last year on draft day. And everybody made a joke that, you know, they're making the picks and he's calling the player, CD Lamb, on the phone. but he didn't have a draft book in front of him. Well, that's because, yeah, people were telling Jerry, they're giving him information. And at the end of the day, he's accountable. But No, I don't think – I think he's gotten better. I really honestly do.
So what Jimmy told me one time, the first year, Jerry was just doing business and Jimmy was doing football. Then you guys started winning titles and Jerry kind of encroached on it. Were you ever in the draft rooms early on?
I never missed one. I was always sitting right next to Jimmy. And, you know, I was kind of the troubleshooter if he wanted to go get a coach or go get a scout or he had the books. And so I witnessed it all. I mean, every trade that was that happened there and the interaction that Jerry and Jimmy had at that point. And Jimmy's 100% correct. I mean, Jerry then, you know, he was just trying to sell t-shirts and get people in the stands. Really. I mean, that was the mentality. And I think I remember we were heading out for a jog and it was going into our last year there and we were pretty good. And we used to always run right after Jimmy's press conference on Tuesday. And there was about four of us, the inner circle, we called it. And we would head out and we would get more done on these walks and jogs than we would get in a staff meeting. And everybody just kind of put their guard down. In fact, that's when the Herschel Walker decision was made two or three years prior to that. It was coming back from a jog. I was talking about we were going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. We were 0-6, I think, at the time. And they had Joe Montana, and I told Jimmy, I said, I feel good about this one. And Jimmy said, feel good about this one. He said, let me tell you something. He says, you better start feeling good about the Texas A&M or LSU job because I'm going to have to be trying to get one of those jobs. Because he says, we're going to get run out of this town. He says, you better get ready for it. He says, we are not going to survive. And so then the conversation come up, how are we going to get players? And we said, who do we have on our roster that we could trade that anybody would want? And we start going through all the players. And Troy Aikman was the first name to come up. Troy had a no trade on his contract, no trade. He was a rookie. And then we got to Herschel Walker, who was still a good player. And so by 4 o'clock that night, Jimmy had the Minnesota Vikings, and I believe it was the Cleveland Browns, both teams kind of negotiating against each other to make the trade for Herschel Walker. And he traded him and we got the draft picks and the rest is history. So my point is this was a big part of us. So we're getting ready to head out on a Tuesday. I remember like yesterday and we turned around and Jimmy said, what's everybody setting up all these tables for? And someone said, well, they're having a press conference. And Jimmy said, I just had my press conference. And he says, no. Jerry's having a press conference. And Jimmy said, Jerry's going to start having press conferences after I do. So that was all was said. We went about our business. And sure enough, it might have been the next week, Troy had a bad game and threw a few interceptions. And Jimmy in his press conference said, I don't care who it is. If you turn the ball over, you can't play because we're going to get beat. And he was talking about the interceptions. And that afternoon, now it's time for Jerry's press conference. And Jerry gets up there and they said, Jimmy said that it doesn't matter who it is. He's not going to tolerate turning the football over. And Troy had two picks or whatever it was. And Jerry's response was, oh, Troy's fine. Don't worry about Troy. So now here we go. The gloves are on and innocently, you know, here's the head coach. Jimmy, you know, got in charge of football and now Jerry's got an opinion. And that's what the media loves. We all know that. The media loves when things come off the rails and now they've got controversy. And that was kind of the beginning of the end, as I remember.
Yeah. But you feel like now Jerry's doing he's kind of letting the guys run it.
He is. And Jerry knows a lot more people now. And I can tell you this without getting the names that he confides in people. You know, about his decisions. Obviously, now it's the big decision is Dak Prescott. What are they going to do with Dak? Are they going to pay him and how much and how long term? So he's wrestling that right now. But Jerry, one thing I say about Jerry, and I've been around this NFL a long time, and there's a lot of owners that they all say they want to win. But Jerry, he talks the talk, but he walks the walk. And he puts his money where his mouth is, and he is willing to do whatever it takes to win a Super Bowl. And I think you always got to give an owner credit that has that type of attitude.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast, proud to be presented by FanDuel. Never played FanDuel Fantasy before? Great. FanDuel is offering users the chance to play free. No deposit required at all. Plus, for those folks who want a deposit, FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with their 20% deposit match. Why do you play on FanDuel? First of all, FanDuel Fantasy, easy to use app. Take 5 seconds. Pick a new team every game. Compete for top cash payouts. For new users, FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with their 20% deposit match. So just go to FanDuel.com/Cowherd. That pays the bills for us. FanDuel.com/Cowherd for more info. FanDuel.com/Cowherd. They know we sent you. FanDuel, more ways to win. So, Coach, the reality of the NFL is if you coach for 3 years and you don't have a winning season, you get fired. Gruden has coached 3 years, 2 losing seasons, and an 8-8. Their defense is still bottom five in the NFL. They have the third best quarterback in their division. Let's be honest, the last 2 years post-Thanksgiving, they have regressed badly. At this point, when do we look at it and go, the Gruden experiment is not working?
Yeah, I think that obviously the relationship with John Gruden and the owner Davis, you know, Al Davis's son, it goes back to when John was here the first time. And John maintained that relationship, our listeners, he maintained that relationship all along. So that's how all this came about. I think he's got good personnel people. I think his GM knows what he's doing. They're trying to do it the right way. You know, some of these picks that they've had, I think, have been good. Jacobs, the running back, I think is an outstanding player. All that I would say is they better get as much as they can out of Derek Carr, because when Derek Carr turns over, I think there could be a big drop off. And if I was to say, when is the clock going to run out on John Gruden? I think it runs out when Derek Carr expires, you know, and gets traded or whatever, and they have to start over. Cause I don't think that they're going to have enough time to start over with a young quarterback and then compete for Super Bowls.
So Belichick probably has the most power in the league, and they are struggling in drafts. Pete Carroll probably second now that Paul Allen died in terms of power, and his quarterback's not happy.
Yeah.
Gruden probably has second or third most power, and the Raiders are a little bit of a mess. Is it possible, you know, everybody wants power as a coach, but that those three guys, Pete, Bill, and Gruden, have too much power and they need to delegate more and they frankly have too much say in personnel? Did you want say in personnel?
I had the say in personnel when I was at the Dolphins, because Don Shula had it, Jimmy had it, and I had it. But I hired Rick Spielman and I brought Rick with me from Chicago. I put Rick in charge of player personnel. And I trusted his opinion. Obviously, I had the final stamp on it. But you got scouts that are doing this for a living year around, 12 months a year, and you have to judge them. And then we had our coaches involved. So I don't know the structure that with Gruden doing. I do know with Belichick that that certain positions he puts a high priority on. I do think this with New England and Belichick. I believe this. You know, they had some key players opt out last year because of the COVID. They're going to be back next year. If Bill Belichick makes a commitment right now, he's got to sign or draft a couple high, big-time offensive players. I think that they can bounce back quick. Now, who's he going to get at quarterback? If I'm a quarterback, And I read some of the comments that Matthew Stafford would go anywhere except go play for Bill Belichick. I think that makes no sense to me. To me, that's stupid. I mean, you go play to New England, you're going to have a chance to win a Super Bowl. I mean, as great as Tom Brady is, and I'm a Tampa fan, and I was riding Tampa all the way to the Super Bowl. Let me tell you something. You know, Tom Brady's got the talent, but his football mind and the things that he does in the huddle and the things that he does on the field and why he won't turn the ball over and understanding situation football, that's all Bill Belichick. And I think that Bill has really gotten slighted for how good he is. And if I'm a quarterback, I'm going to New England, because I think they're going to bounce back in a hurry in a hurry if he makes a commitment to get a free agent playmaker on offense, receiver, tight end, and a playmaker in the draft. He's got to add a couple guys.
You have a place in Chicago. You coach the Bears. You know the franchise well. You can miss in scouting. You better not miss a quarterback. You can win games with Teddy Bridgewater and Mitch Trubisky. Nobody disputes that. But none of you guys are in it to win games. If you want to keep your job, you got to win. I mean, Andy Reid got fired. Pete Carroll's been fired. You got to win big games. It feels like Chicago is one of those organizations, Dave. They can't get quarterback right. They haven't gotten quarterback right forever. I don't know if it's institutional. I don't know if it's a tough town and they prefer their defense. So Stafford's off the market. Wentz is off the market. Deshaun appears to be off the market. Who would you go after if you ran the Bears?
Hey, Sid Gilman was a good quarterback for the Bears. Come on. You know? I was there 6 years and I had six different starting quarterbacks. So I fall into that same thing. And I had Jim Harbaugh 1 year. Then we signed Eric Kramer as a free agent from Detroit. We didn't draft one. And then Eric got hurt and we had Steve Walsh as a free agent and on and on and on. The easy thing to say is you got to go draft one high so you can have a Deshaun Watson, okay? Or you can have a Patrick Mahomes. Well, they drafted one high in Mitchell Trubisky, higher than both of those guys, and it hasn't worked out. So I think that, you know, right now the Bears are looking to make a trade. I mean, they are desperate at quarterback. I mean, they are going to waste a really outstanding defense if they don't get a quarterback. And right now it looks like Nick Foles is going to be the guy. And there's a little bit, Colin, what you said. You know, Chicago does not mind winning a game 10-7. So if you can run the ball and play defense, the real mindset of the people in Chicago, and I live there, I mean, you know, win 10-7. We don't really care about the quarterback. It's easy to fall into that trap. But obviously we know to win a Super Bowl, you got to have one. And the Bears have missed in free agents. The Bears have missed with draft picks, and now they sit there and they don't pick till 20th. They're not going to draft one at that point. So they've got to get a free agent quarterback. You know, it's probably going to be a Marcus Mariota or a backup guy. And I don't think whoever they sign is going to be better than Mitch Trubisky. That's my opinion.
Yeah, you've always been more pro Trubisky. Your belief is you can. I mean, he does have a winning record. You can win games with him, but it does appear to be you when you get against better teams. There are limitations. Is that fair?
Absolutely, but you can. I think you can win 10 games with Mitch Trubisky if you run him and get him out of the pocket. The guy's a heck of an athlete. Put his stats up. When all these guys were talking about all these quarterbacks, and I do these radio shows in Chicago, I says, go ahead, put his stats up and put Sam Darnold's stats beside him. You know, I mean, these other quarterbacks, take his stats and put Carson Wentz stats next to him. There's not much difference. You know, now, are you going to make a change just to make a change because you want something new? That's really what they're talking about doing. And unless you can get, you know, Deshaun Watson Russell Wilson, that now I'm all on board. But other than that, I don't see there being much change. I really don't.
You coached the Dolphins for years, and you were in Miami with the Hurricanes and Jimmy. So, listen, it's pretty obvious from the reports. They benched Tua twice last year. He threw for under 100 yards three times. Listen, if you can get him to move a little bit off platform, he's pretty limited as an athlete and a thrower. He's accurate when he's got lots of time to throw. You know, I contend that I see the games, but they see practice. And if they have these misgivings about him, they're seeing to it practice, you know, and they're just saying he's a very limited guy. Did you ever, I mean, you can have games, Dave.
Right.
But did you ever make evaluations just watching practice on guys and say, listen, guys, he's not it. You have to make decisions like that all the time in personnel. My gut is that they're seeing a lot of Tua that we don't see, and it gives them real pause. That's what my gut feeling.
Yeah, it might be, you know, and I talked, you know, Chan Gailey, who was the offensive coordinator and resigned after this year. Chan and I are good friends. Chan was my offensive coordinator at the Dolphins with Jay Fiedler And then I went and worked for Chan when he was a head coach of Buffalo. And I can tell you this, that everything that they're doing down there with Brian Flores, the head coach, it's duplicate just what Bill Belichick did. And, you know, for years, Bill Belichick won with defense and running the ball, and your quarterback was kind of a game manager. And those times have changed. I agree with you. But I think I think Tua is too young. I would not jump to conclusions with this kid because I know what type of person he is, and I know his work ethic. And when you have a guy that's got enough talent and he has those type of intangibles, I think you got to give him some time. I really do. And I don't think you can jump the gun on him. They got some good picks, add some better players around him. And I think that you cross the quarterback bridge after at least another year. Terry Bradshaw, it was his fifth year. It was Troy. I was at Pitt coaching when Terry, they were going to run him out of Pittsburgh his second year. They said he'd never play. Troy Aikman, I was with Troy the whole time. And it was really Troy's third year when Troy Aikman, everybody said, wow, look at this. So I know everyone says, oh, these quarterbacks can play sooner nowadays. You know what? They can play if you want to throw those quick little 5-yard passes. But as far as getting guys in and out of good plays and the bad plays and avoiding the blitz and making checks and knowing situations, it takes time. It truly does. It's not as easy as what somebody's, quarterback gurus would like to think.
You know, it is interesting where, you know, Russell Wilson now wants a greater say in play calling. Tom Brady at the end of New England, he wanted a bigger say in play calling. You tell me as a coach, was Jimmy willing to give that up to Troy at some point? Were you ever willing to give up some of that?
Oh, you know what? I don't think give it up. I mean, these players now keep it. This whole Russell Wilson thing's got me a little bit baffled. And I'll tell you why. The offensive coordinator is no longer there. You know, so it's not like he's walking in. You know, Schottenheimer was the offensive coordinator. He's gone. So, you know, what are they going to do on offense? And I would be shocked if, knowing the type of person and knowing Pete Carroll, he's a people person. He's communicator. That's stuff that he does best. I would have a tough time believing that he didn't sit down with Russell Wilson and talk about what's good and what's bad. And I just hope that Russell, and they were good and early in the year, and guess what they were doing? They were running the ball at Seattle. When they kind of backed off the running game because of a couple injuries, and it was all Russell, they struggled. So maybe there's a little bit of frustration there with Russell on his part too. I don't know. But it's just so out of character. And the thing that bothers me is when they go public like this. When you go public and you start criticizing the team, and you start criticizing. I heard an interview by one of his offensive linemen. It wasn't pretty with Russell Wilson at Seattle. I mean, they didn't appreciate that, talking about how much he's being hit and all this stuff. We know that. Everybody knows that. That should be in-house stuff. So, you know, I don't know. And this year at Tampa, you know, I talked to the guys at Tampa. Tom Brady was having problems getting hit. Talked about it on our show, Colin. And so he went and told Bruce, you want me to throw the ball down the field? You got to keep Gronk in and block and give me more time and I'll throw the ball down the field. Bruce Arians meets him halfway. Gronk starts to be blocking. They do a lot more play action. Pass goes way up. As a result, Tom starts hitting those passes down the field. So there's got to be give and take. Would I do that? 100%. I mean, we always had the game plan. I mean, every place I've been, we did it Chicago, Miami. I would give that game plan and sit down with the offensive coordinator 2 days before. And I would say, okay, Russell, what do you like? And there's something on here that you really don't like. If you don't, we're not going to call it. We'll scratch it right now. And I think, you know, so I don't know. After the fact, you know, that's not good. I don't like that. And, hey, Drew Brees, we're talking about Troy and Terry Bradshaw. Drew Brees. I remember when I was at the Dolphins and he was with the Chargers, we went out there and played him. I don't know. I mean, we beat him bad. And Drew Brees was just a guy at that time. And then all of a sudden he makes the trade and he gets going at New, and he becomes, you know, a Hall of Famer, a great player. So, you know, it takes some time. That's what a category I would put Tua in right now. And as far as the Russell Wilsons of the world and how much say so, hey, you go in there, I think you meet halfway, which is stuff has to be legitimate. You know, Tom Brady went in and said stuff that was factual. You just don't go in because you're frustrated and you want to change the game plan. I mean, that's not going to work. So the whole thing in Seattle really kind of has me on my heels a little bit, because I know Pete's a good communicator and I know what type of person Russell Wilson is, but it's not good right now. Maybe money's behind it all. I don't know.
So, you know, we're a few weeks from free agency. Even these Matt Stafford, Carson Wentz deals aren't official yet. When you were with the Bears or the Dolphins or Jimmy in Dallas, a large percentage of free agents, Dave, they whiff. They don't work for your culture. They look good somewhere else. You bring them in and they just don't fit. Were you apprehensive? Did you, you know, in Miami and Chicago when it was your say, would you rather draft and develop, or did you go after a couple? Did you have some hits? Did you have some misses?
No, you're always going to have some misses. I remember our first year at Dallas, when they called it Plan B back then, but it was free agency. And it started, and man, these players were out there, and we thought it was Christmas. We were kids at Christmas time. We said, oh, we'll we'll sign him. Jimmy, man, we're running in with the waiver wire. Hey, so-and-so just got released. Let's go sign him. Well, here come these players in, and the one guy's walking down the hall, and he's got a limp. And we said, this guy can't even – he's got a limp. We just paid him money. You know, this guy can't work out. And we said, it's time to go work out in the weight room. He said, I can't. My shoulder's not – I mean – and so we came to the conclusion. We came to the conclusion that most of these guys that are free agents – and hear what I'm saying now – you know, the team that's releasing them from and letting them be a free agent, they know more about them than anybody else. And there must be an issue. So when we would sign free agents, we always took the approach, okay, we're going to do our research as everybody does, but we're not going to overpay for this guy and we're going to bring him in. And we never really had high expectations. If he was better than the guy that we had, okay, we were a better football team. No question about it. You know, now he might go, we may have a D player there, and all of a sudden we sign a C free agent. That's a positive. It made us a better football team, but we weren't going to pay a lot of money. But, you know, you can get carried away. And every coach, and I hear this crap now, everybody thinks that they can coach this kid. I heard it with one of these quarterbacks. Oh, we'll get him squared away. We'll get him, you know, throwing the ball better and we'll make his footwork better. That's a bunch of crap. I mean, that sounds good. You know, that's the stuff you say at a coach's clinic. I'm serious. Some guy's sitting in the front row with a notebook and he's writing all this stuff down. You know, now he's got to go out and he can't score any points. He says, God, I thought it was easier than this, you know, but no, seriously, you know, there's the Reggie Whites and there's the Brett Favre, and I traded for Ricky Williams, you know, and Ricky was a great player for me. So we have signed some, but majority of them are upgrade players. You know, they're not going to be the difference maker that takes you to the Super Bowl.
So you are also a very good recruiter. You found Aaron Donald. You found Darrell Revis. You found Shady McCoy. You've always had an eye for personnel, and I think it's sometimes innate. Some guys actually have a really good eye for personnel. Jimmy Johnson, by the way, had a good eye for personnel as well. So you two together, you know, were obviously very dynamic. You go back to your drafts at this point now. You kind of know who you like, what you need at this point. You're putting some stuff together. Is there anything in the draft process that you thought was a little underrated? Your thoughts about combines, personal workouts? Yeah. Was there stuff you thought was overrated?
I always had a feeling, and when I was recruiting, you know, trying to get these, you mentioned Aaron Donald. You know, Aaron Donald didn't have very many offers, but I would always tell my coaches this and my scouts. Get me players that do things that we don't have to coach. And they would look at me like, and I says, because if we got to go out there and say, step with this foot and use this hand, and then someone's going to be running by him. It's too late. get me players that do things that we don't have to coach. In other words, get those playmakers, get those athletes that can do things, that have the God-given ability that they don't need to be told every step. And that's LeSean McCoy. I mean, I remember we're playing Notre Dame, and and we're going to run this Pirates. It's the longest game in Notre Dame history and Pitt football history. We're playing up at South Bend. It's tied. We're in the fourth overtime. The sprinklers even came on because they were on a timer. The game's going so long. And the fans are hanging off the rafters. It's national TV. You know, it's a great game. So we kind of cross. We're down in there in overtime, and we call our best play. And it's an inside run with Shady McCoy. And we're just going to try to make 2 yards, and we're going to try a long field goal. And we call the play, and Shady takes one step and runs to the outside, makes somebody miss, runs down to the 15-yard line. We score. We kick the field goal, and we beat Notre Dame. And after the game, I went up to him. I said, "Now, Shady, that was an inside play. You were supposed to run that thing between the guard and center. Why'd you run out there?" And he looks at me and says, "Because nobody was out there." We always talked about that. And I can remember going back to Jimmy. There was a kid I won't mention his name. He was a first-round draft pick. And he was as good a looking player to this day as you would ever see physically. And he could run fast, and he was tough. And we were sitting in there, and I said, we should really consider this guy. And Jimmy said, "Throw his stats up there." And we put his stats for his whole college career. And I think the guy had 7 sacks. It might have been 8. And Jimmy says, "This guy's got 7 sacks for his whole career." He says, "We get guys at Miami, Cortez Kennedy and Russell Merrill, get 7 sacks in a game." He said, "This guy's got 7 sacks on the year and his career." He says, "Dave, he doesn't make enough plays." And I says, "You're right." So we took him off the board. Get guys that make plays. Get guys that do things.
Yeah. Do you ever miss the personnel? I mean, I know you'd love to coach games. The practice wears you out, the owners, all that nonsense. The personnel thing to me, would you, if somebody called and said, "Hey, can you just be part of our drafting process?" Would that interest you?
Not really. I mean, I never got into it like Jimmy did. I mean, I relied on people. But I mean, I enjoyed it. But if you ask me to go coach and win games that way, I'll do that tonight. I mean, I still, coaching was my passion. And I think everybody, sometimes coaches get bored and over a period of time and they move into the personnel, or they get tired of the personnel and they really want to coach, So I think some of these guys that have been around a long time, that can happen. It can happen, but not me. I've always enjoyed the coaching. That's where you have the interaction with the players. That's what I always
do. What do you do? I think Kyle Shanahan's got a roster. I like him. The troubling part about Garoppolo, there was a lot of rumors about him, and now John Lynch came out and said he's going nowhere. My concern, Dave, he gets hurt in week 2, week 3, and week 2, 3 of the last 4 years. Forget about getting hurt in week 16 or week 14. He's out by September 15th. Are there some guys... they're just DNA. They're not built for a season, Dave. They're just not built for it.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. And that was always something, particularly sometimes we would overlook stuff from guys coming out of college. But the minute they get to the NFL, injury was always a big topic for us. It truly was. And and when you go back to even Tua, that was the only thing that I really heard from people coming out was his injuries going back to high school. And then he got hurt at Alabama. And there was concerns, could he stay healthy in the NFL? So now you got Garoppolo with the injuries. I'm sure in the back of their minds that, and in the back of his mind, that that's a concern for him. There's no question about it. But the style of offense and what they do, I mean, they've won. When they went to the Super Bowl, they were one of the top teams, first or second in the league in rushing, and they were playing great defense. They were a top defensive team. And And Garoppolo was kind of a game manager, you know, and that's the situation that they put him in, and that's how they used him. Nothing the matter with that. I think that's going to be their plan. I mean, they know right now more than anybody what they can do with him physically and what they can't. And they're going to try to keep him healthy and get the most out of him.
Dave Wonstadt joining us in the Colin Cowherd podcast on a Sunday night, airs Monday morning. Thanks for stopping by. When college football has changed, it used to be there was one signing period. Now there's two. And I always had this feeling that, and you've done both, that for quality of life and control, I'd prefer college football. For intellectual challenges, I'd prefer the NFL. And that you'd have to, I think you can be very happy in both. I do wonder, though, that with now two recruiting periods at the college level, there's really no time off. Recruiting is 360 days a year. And I do wonder, Dave, if there's a lot of these college coaches that are thinking to themselves, well, what's the point? I mean, listen, I these big colleges now, Tom Herman went 4-0 in bowl games at Texas. They ran him out. And I do wonder if some of these good college coaches now, a James Franklin, a Ryan Day at Ohio State, where they think Brian Kelly's probably a little old generationally. But if you were coaching today and you looked at the landscape of recruiting, what would you choose if given the option, a great college job like Steve Sarkisian at Texas or a great NFL job like the Bears?
I would go NFL without a doubt. You mentioned two things. One, the recruiting. I mean, they're offering players now in 9th and 10th grade. I mean, that is drastically. I mean, and it's crazy because these kids, you know, there's so much time to change their minds, but yet you got to stay on them and you got to be calling them and you got to be talking to them and you got to be doing all the recruiting stuff. And now they're going to get into this player licensing. Where now you're going to be able to, you know, their players are going to get money for their image being used on posters and T-shirts and so forth. I mean, once that becomes real, and it's going to, I mean, that's going to be another burden on college coaches. So you got the recruiting year round, as you said, with no time off. And then it's difficult. I mean, it's really difficult. You know, in the NFL, here's the difference. When I took my Bears job, Don Shula told me this. He says, Dave, remember this. He says, in college, you know, you've got the AD, you've got the president, you've got a board of trustees, got a lot of people that you got to try to keep happy. He said, but in the NFL, the most important person is the owner. The second most important person is the owner. The third most important person is the owner. And that's true. I mean, if you can build up, if you get a good pro job, and you build up a relationship with your owner and he believes in you, you're doing the right things. I think the NFL is the way to go. I really do. And the college game, because of its expansion, and they're paying colleges more. There's no question about that. They're paying them more. But I think the NFL is the way to go as far as dealing with an owner, less people, and still having a chance to coach. And that's why we get in the profession, to coach.
Yeah, when you were at Miami, obviously you guys could recruit like Broward County. So not only did you have only one recruiting period, but a lot of your talent was 75 miles away. Was it easy? I mean, when you were building those powerhouses, was it easy to coach the Canes?
It was, but I'll tell you what. We had a philosophy. Unless it was a quarterback, we were only going to go 6-hour drive in a car from Coral Gables, from our campus. I mean, it's, wow. So that was, and we got on a plane, we went and flew, got Vinny Testaverde, you know, out of New Jersey. We got Steve Walsh out of Minnesota, but we couldn't beat, even though I was there the whole time I was there, we lost one regular season game, the Notre Dame, by 1 point. I mean, we never lost, but we recruited players that Florida and Florida State and Alabama and Notre Dame didn't want, but we felt like they were playmakers, that they were good athletes, and they came in and we had a culture there that players bought into, and we just believed that we were going to win. And a lot of times we took a lesser talent. That's the point I'm trying to make, and develop this kid in to become a better player. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Now we were good. I mean, it was pretty good. I mean, I tell a lot of stories. In fact, I was down in the Keys last weekend with Jimmy, and we got laughing, and we were laughing so hard. I mean, we were crying, just telling old war stories. And the one came up, and he said, "I still can't believe that you didn't even come out of the press box for the Nebraska Orange Bowl." And I said, "I told you they weren't going to score." Now, keep in mind, this was the last game that we coached at the University of Miami. And we're playing Nebraska. We were number 3 in the country. I think they were number 5. Turner Gill was their quarterback. You know, Tom Osborne. Yeah. I mean, they had a heck of a team. And we're playing in the Orange Bowl. And we had, the year before that, Buddy Ryan called up, and he was interested in Jerome Brown. And he ended up drafting him with the first pick. And he wanted to come down and work out Jerome Brown at the University of Miami. And so Jimmy says, "Hey, Buddy Ryan's coming down." And I said, "Hey, bring up the buddy that if we're going to spend time talking about Jerome Brown, he needs to spend some time talking about the Bear defense. I want to learn the Bear defense." So Buddy was great. Buddy came down, and we spent the day on the chalkboard. And so now I got this folder. I'm ready with the Bear defense. We practice it. And, you know, we were so good, and we never even used it. I mean, so now we get into the bowl game. And I remember paging through my notes, and I'm saying, okay, Nebraska. I said, you know, why the heck don't we pull out the Bear defense? This would be fun. So we practiced the Bear, and we're going to spring this on Nebraska. Well, we did. And it was just a train wreck. I mean, you know, they weren't making first down. So generally going into halftime for our listeners, what happens is I would be in the press box, and Butch Davis and another coach would be on the sidelines. And we would talk about, these are the run adjustments we got to make. These are the passes, get it drawn up on the board. I'll be down at halftime. We'll get everybody together. We'll make sure I'll chalk it all up. We'll be good. We'll go. So now we get close to the half. And I said, Butch says, "What are you thinking?" I says, "I'm not thinking anything. These guys can't score. They can't block us. They can't figure this out." And so Dave Campo, who's longtime coach, Campo's sitting next to me, and he says, "Hey, you know who's playing at halftime?" I said, "Who?" He said, "Your favorite group." I said, "The Temptations?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Hey, get Jimmy on the phone." So Jimmy gets on. I said, "Hey, coach." I says, "I'll come down there at halftime if you want me to, but I really don't have anything to say. These guys aren't going to score." And he said, "Really?" And I says, "Yeah." I says, "You know, we're good. Butch is down there. He's got them." I says, it's really crowded. This one's booked." So he says, "Okay." You know, and I know Jimmy. If he says okay in that tone, as soon as he says that, bam, it's halftime. I tell Dave Campo, "Go get us some food." And they're playing. And I'm kind of rocking my girl. You know, it's going back and forth. Attempts are into it. And Bob Trumpy and Don Cricky are doing the Orange Bowl. And they walk by the booth, and they see me sitting in there, and I'm kind of going back and forth. And Bob Trumpy and I, because they had so many of our games, we were kind of friends. And he's outside, and he's motioning for me, "Coach, can I see you a second?" So I get up and walk out. I said, "What's up, Bob?" He said, "I don't know how to say this. Did you get fired? What are you doing in the press box?" I said, "No, I wanted to see the Temptations." I said, "Now keep in mind, he's going to announce the second half." I said, "Bob, these guys aren't going to score on us." So he just kind of rubs his head and goes and sits down. I think we beat him 31-3. They kicked the field goal or something. You know, I don't.
That's funny.
Yeah. So that is it may be the only game, major game of a 2 top 10 teams where we didn't even have a halftime. Jimmy yelled at him and got him stirred up, and I stayed up and listened to the Temptations.
Did Jimmy ever get mad at you? You guys are close today. Did he ever bark at you?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, we would we would come up with stuff and you know, be trying it, and he'd say, I don't like it. And I'd say, "Well, I think it'll work. We got a chance." And he'd come back, "No, you know what? You may like it, but damn it, I don't want to do it." Or whatever. And it was good. We always communicated, but But Jimmy was great. He was fantastic. And like I said, we still talk once a week at least.
Oh, I love that. I love that. All right, great stuff. Dave Wonstadt, what an absolute pleasure. You're a great storyteller, and I could talk Canes and Cowboys stories. Now, you are in Naples right now?
And I am in Naples right now. I played golf today, and I had a little couple cocktails here with a couple of my buddies and came up here. I'm in the boardroom at the Ritz-Carlton doing your show. Think about that. That's where I'm at.
I've been there before. Are you at the Beach Ritz or the Golf Ritz?
The Golf Ritz. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a beautiful part of the country. I used to have a house there, had to sell it when I moved to LA. And it's the only piece of property in my life I sold and regret. I absolutely love Naples. Love it. My wife and I, it's just so much fun. The people, it's a fast story. So folks, one time I'm talking to Dave about Naples. And we're just talking about Naples. And I told him I had a house and he's like, oh, really? I said, oh God, I love Naples. I said, man, I get up, I go run, I work out. And then I go to this place. There was one place I loved. I said, God, there was this place called Handsome Harry's. And Dave goes, yeah, I owned it. I went, you were Handsome Harry? And then I said, well, what happened? And then you told me some story about the other guy who owned it, not on the up and up, and you don't have it anymore.
Correct. No, that's true. And I could walk to it from where I live downtown there. So I loved that place. And I was probably sitting at the other end of the bar when you and your wife were there.
I didn't even know you yet.
I was the guy smoking a cigar. I used to smoke cigars right then. Yep, absolutely.
One of my favorite people. Coach, great seeing you. Go hang out with your wife and have a great Sunday night.
All right. See you soon. Be safe. Bye-bye.
Remember to follow us on social media at The Volume Sports on Twitter and Instagram. Rate, review, and hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to podcasts. Have yourself a great week. I could talk to Dave Wonstadt for hours. The dude just makes me laugh. I love him. Thanks for listening. Volume.